Grant Cooper is with me. He conducts the New Mexico Philharmonic this Saturday night at 6 o'clock in a program that includes Enescu, Rachmaninoff's third piano concerto, and a brand new work. Welcome, Maestro.
Always a pleasure to be here.
First of all, the Enescu, it's one of his two Romanian rhapsodies, and this one's probably the less played of the two.
Well, interestingly enough, Enescu wrote some really great orchestral music, but here in the United States, almost none of it is played except for these two rhapsodies. So I'm talking about less played of the less played, really. But you're right, both of the rhapsodies were written in 1901. The first one is the famous one and is played quite often, including by me at many youth concerts because it has an immediate connection to any audience. The second one is a little bit more introspective, maybe a little deeper, explores a couple of main themes, but doesn't really create the sense of excitement overtly like the first one does. So that's probably the reason why it's played less often. And interestingly enough, when Enescu conducted these two rhapsodies on a concert, he always did the second one first. So it kind of proves the point, I think, that the first rhapsody, the famous rhapsody, is the one that has the big ending and everyone's going wah, rah, rah at the end. Whereas the second rhapsody, the one we're going to play, does really work as a curtain raiser. So that's the place it's playing in this program as well, as a curtain raiser.
And was Enescu, being Romanian, sort of deeply committed to the nationalism of his country? Does all his music reflect folk melodies and other music that surrounded him?
Well, to be fair, that's a pretty big generalization. I would say that my career in music, which is over 40 years now, has just been a constant affirmation of the fact that every composer's music reflects his or her time in history, place in history, and certainly national origin. And I think that's partly because in the case of most composers, particularly the folk music of a place where you're from, is just so ingrained in your experience, not as a musician, but as a human being. So you've learned it from your mother and your extended family and your community and your country, and you can't help but express yourself, which is interesting, you know, because we're playing a brand new piece by a native of Albuquerque on this program as well, and one might well ask, how does that reflect Albuquerque?
And his experience growing up, because when some of the romantic composers we talk about growing up, they would have heard piano music, they might have heard concerts, they would have played music, but they didn't have the radio, they didn't have MTV, they didn't have YouTube. The composer we're talking about is from Albuquerque, Colin Martin, and his piece is inspired by Leonard Bernstein?
Well, I believe that his commission was based on a tribute to Bernstein, and it would be very interesting, I think, to find out in what ways any composer is going to pay tribute, either by quoting or by just getting the general sense of a composer. I myself have written a little bit of a inspired by Bernstein piece for children called Goldilocks and the Three Bears, and it's inspired by Bernstein because I was joking with a musical friend about, if you want to have something that sounds like Bernstein, it must be in 7/8, which actually sounds more like Dave Brubeck, you know, but Bernstein was a master at that kind of asymmetrical rhythm, and that's what inspired me as a composer. In this particular case, I think there are a few obvious overt examples of what Colin has taken from Bernstein. One is the interval of the tritone, which is the first two notes of the song Maria. And that's really distinctive because it has a very shifting harmonic bass, and so you can take it in many different directions. And I also know from what he's written in this program notes that the theme of the last movement is dum dee da 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 dee dum, which is from Candide, but upside down. So he takes some actual flesh and bones of Bernstein, extracts the DNA, as it were, and then creates something new on top of that. So there are probably many, many other ways that he's been, in addition to this harmonic idea of the tritone and also the inversion of the theme, that he's paid tribute to Bernstein. Not the least of which is probably that as an American, he, like most of us, have been influenced in many ways, seen and unseen, by Leonard Bernstein. His Young People's Concerts, for example, his incredible career as a conductor and as a composer and as an educator.
So you're coming to this concert this weekend, coming to the orchestra this week, fresh. What was your first contact with the piece, and did you have contact with Colin about the work back and forth?
Yes, and I'm really, really happy with the way how collaboration evolved as well. You might think that a composer commissioning a piece would just say, this is my piece, now it's up to you, conduct it. But in fact, Colin was really open to suggestions that I had, mainly about the way he had notated the music so that it would be clearer for the musicians and take less rehearsal time. Because that's one of the things that we face. We don't have unlimited rehearsal time on music, which is, in this case, very unfamiliar because it's brand new. So I was anxious to help Colin make some notational adjustments that helped the musicians understand what his intentions were, which meant back and forth, what are your intentions? What would you like to express in what you've said here? And I used my own experience as a composer and as a conductor in trying to find some ways to advise Colin on how he might notate an idea. Because there are many ways in our notational system in music to write something down, and in particular to create a sense not just of what the pitches and the rhythms are, but what's the articulation. And I imagine most of our listeners understand that, but that's di-a-di-a-du-a-du-dam. It's not the same as pic-o-tic-o-toc-o-tuc-a. That's an example of a real big articulation change, which completely changes the sense that one has as a listener of what the music is saying.
Having worked with composers on new pieces before and in your own pieces, some of that changes even if you think you know what it's going to sound like once you get the orchestra. Perhaps you want the strings to play on a different part of the bow for an effect, or you want a spiccato where you didn't have it before, or where you wrote a forte line for the brass, you realize they've really got to be lower than that. So does that, with a new composer, change in rehearsal?
Absolutely, and I think that any piece, whether it be by Beethoven or Tchaikovsky, makes an adjustment based on the hall you're in as well. You have to, how long are the long notes, how short are the short notes, how fast are you going, how slow you're going, would be dependent on the acoustic of a given hall. One of the things that has really changed in composition over the last 10 or 20 years is the fact that we now have notational programs that will play back for you through the musical instrument digital interface, MIDI, process. They will play back your score to you, and they will approximate nowadays with some pretty realistic sounds, but it's not the same as a live musician by any means at all. And in fact, it sounds like a shortcut, but it's a shortcut disguised as a temptation, I believe, to think that, oh, well, this is the way it's going to sound because this is the way it sounds on my MIDI realization. Real live players respond differently to the same notation based on the context of what's around it. The computer doesn't know that. The computer just sees a staccato quarter note. They play a short quarter note, and that's it. You can adjust it if you're really fastidious about it, but you can get a playback that sounds pretty good to you, is well balanced, and it takes the eye of a professional musician and conductor to see the score and say, wow, those balances won't be achieved exactly in the way that it's written down, even though they sound okay on your MIDI.
Not to mention that it may not be written idiosyncratically for the instrument and the musician to be able to play.
Excellent point. And there have been a couple of times with Colin that I've said to you, I wonder if this might be reassigned to a different instrument. Same music, not trying to change your music, but if we give it a different instrumentation face, then your ideas may be expressed a little bit more clearly. And one of the things, too, about instruments, as we spend our life in music, we know that there are certain things that a clarinet can do, that you can write the same notes for the trumpet, but it's going to come out completely differently on that instrument because it's not, as you point out, characteristic of a given instrument. So finding the beautiful place in an instrument's range where it sings and it plays easily is really part of the craft, I think, of orchestration. Now, sometimes, and Stravinsky was a master of this, you take instruments out of their comfort zone deliberately, the opening of the Rite of Spring, for example. Nobody back in 1913 even knew that a bassoon could play that high. Probably the bassoonists themselves didn't realize until Stravinsky asked them to. And certainly listeners weren't used to the sort of sound that was going to happen when you had a bassoon, which is one of the lowest instruments in the woodwind family, play in the very highest register possible. It wasn't characteristic at that time. It's become commonplace. And students today can all play the Rite of Spring without any problem at all with their eyes closed because they've memorized it and they play it beautifully and makes it sound like there could be no other instrument that this was intended for. And that's a real change. You know, we're not hearing Stravinsky's Rite of Spring in concert the way people in 1913 heard it.
Well, that could be said of everything. That could certainly be said of the music of Mozart and Beethoven and Bach.
Absolutely.
Not just because of the differences in the instruments, but differences in tuning and what was acceptable in performance practice.
Mm-hmm. You're absolutely right.
Grant Cooper conducts the New Mexico Philharmonic this weekend. Music of Enescu, Colin Martin, and Rachmaninoff, with pianist Olga Kern. The concert is at 6 o'clock Saturday at Pope Joy Hall. Grant will join me for a pre-concert talk at 5 o'clock. You can find out more and get tickets at any UNM tickets outlet or online at nmphil.org. Grant, thank you so much.
Always a pleasure.